I'm Frank Fontana, and this is the Human Renovation Project. For years, I transformed people's lives from the outside in, but today, we begin a new journey, transforming lives from the inside out. Welcome to the new age of the Human Renovation Project. On this episode of the Human Renovation Project, we meet Danny the Car Bomb Carcillo, a former Chicago Blackhawks Stanley Cup winning pro hockey star whose dream career became a nightmare. He suffered debilitating head injuries and post-traumatic stress from his years of playing pro hockey. Today, he faces his biggest challenges yet. He's living the ultimate modern-day David and Goliath story, taking on the very league he gave his soul to, the National Hockey League, in a battle to save fellow pro hockey players from the rough and traumatic life he now faces as a battered and bruised retired pro hockey player. Let's hear the human renovation story of Danny Carcillo.
Bryant, along further Zanin with a healthy hit. Fed back out in front of Oliver Lobov, not once again.
How are you feeling today, Dean?
Today's a good day.
Today's a good day.
Yeah, today's a good day. There's good days and bad days, which is, I think, normal for everybody. But, today's a good day. Yesterday, not so much.
Why is that the case for you, Dan?
I've got to do a little bit more research into, like, medically why that is. But I've had hundreds and probably thousands of brain injuries. And so my chemical makeup and it's changed.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like myself. My parents were just down here this past weekend, and it's always nice, like, to have them down and to see them. But there's some days where I'm off, you know. And there's tools I have that I can use.
Well, let's back up here and talk about why you feel like this today, because 20 years ago, you probably wouldn't thought this was the case.
No, I mean,
you started a career in professional hockey. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of get a little bit of the journey story here. Starting off as a little kid in Canada, right? You grew up in Canada?
Mm-hmm. King City, yeah, Ontario. Shout out, small town, 7,000 people, 33,000 now, but yeah.
Still not a massive number.
No, I mean, Canada, hockey's religion. It's like football here. And so everything revolves around the hockey rink,
right?
Especially in a small community like that.
Sure.
Everybody knows each other. But I was, to be honest with you, I was never a kid that was, I'm going to make the NHL, I'm going to be this hockey player. And I wanted to be a lawyer.
Really?
That's what I wrote on my grade 8 cloud. You know,
which,
like,
makes
what do you
sense.
Want to be?
You know, because your nickname in the NHL was Car Bomb,
mm-hmm.
right? And your MO from, you know, what I've seen of you on the ice and what I've read about you is the fighter. You know, you're the protector of the star, quote-unquote, players.
Mm-hmm.
So it would make sense that you would, in your mind, choose law and fighting from an intellectual level as a potential career for you, but then it made a shift.
Yeah, and I mean, with certain things and the way my mind works, like, I get bored pretty quickly. And so I have to stay busy, and I don't think you could ever get bored of law. So I've dipped a toe in to researching about paralegal classes, to research what it would actually take to get something like that done. It'd be a 7-year journey, but...
You'd start that today, you think?
Yeah, soon. I'm just, you know, going back and forth, kind of... I'm trying to time it with my kids going to school so that I could actually execute it. I have a lot of things in the background that I haven't really talked about in social media yet that is coming out in 2020.
Great.
So building all that stuff out
with
a couple people. So
when you were a kid and you just, you know, you went from law to hockey, when did that happen and why?
Mm. So again, like, you have to play hockey to,
if you live in Canada, it's a
prerequisite, be accepted,
right?
Yeah. Like, so I was actually in AA my whole life. And so I wasn't even accepted into the cool group in Canada because there's three different levels.
Yeah, talk to me about that, because I am uneducated when it comes to.
Single, double A, triple A, and triple A. So, for example, here in Illinois, there's 8,000 registered kids who play hockey a year. There's 650,000 in Ontario, the province that I grew up in.
That's major competition.
Major competition. So from, you know, from a very young age, you're in the rink, and if you aren't playing at like an elite level at AAA, if you're not one of the best or in that best league, you're not getting looked at by tier two, you know, universities, OHL scouts, even NHL scouts. Now I heard they're starting as young as 12 and 13, which is crazy to
the
me.
The pressure that puts on kids is
yeah, it is. And you need to, you know, one thing about all of this is that there needs to be, I think, more attention on the mental side of how our brain really operates everything, of how we think, of how we see ourselves, not only as people, but as a player. Because for hockey, like, it was a very much an emotional release for me. And that's why I think I was never one of those kids who were like, oh, wow, like, look at these. The game wasn't, it's, even when I watch it today, it's fun, it's skilled, it's exciting. But I was never like a really, really big fan. I was never one of those diehard kids. For me, when I went to the rink, I needed it.
So you played because it was an outlet for you?
An outlet, yes. An emotional release. I needed it.
But you didn't love the game, you're saying?
I loved the game of hockey. I never watched it on TV. You know, the only things I did was like fake being sick and stay home to watch Don Cherry rock 'em, sock 'em. Right. You know, like, and if we start going down this path, it's the job I did was created by the NHL.
Yeah.
Because they sold rivalries, hate and violence.
Sure.
And that's how you get kids hooked, right? You make these tapes of big hits and fights, and it really is. It's a role you play within a subset of a team. Like, not everybody's a hockey player.
But not everybody's positions. A bruiser.
No, like you, right? You have a podcast. Well, there's a producer. There's an engineer. There's all these people playing different roles to make this happen.
Sure.
Enforcers is just one of those roles.
Now, let's stop there for a second, because enforcer, right? So I believe in life, we all have choices, mm-hmm. right? We choose these roles as well as, you know, society then kind of puts us in stereotypical boxes, and then you become that guy. You become the enforcer. Was there something in your childhood early on, whether it was a violent past, a parental violence, or anything that drove you into this idea that I need to be the fighter, I need to be the protector? What were you protecting at such a young age?
It always comes back to, for me, is injustice. Wherever I see it, I try to act. It was very similar on the ice. My upbringing was just old school Italian, man. Like,
did you fight a lot on the streets? And were you like a tough guy?
Not really. No, I mean, I was sensitive. I still am. Like, I'm very different.
Very emotional. That's a very Italian thing too.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
But like, so, and no fault to my parents. I love my parents, and they've taught me everything. And I won't create a household based off of like physical abuse, because
or fear.
Or fear, like the fear based. I'm done with that. You know, I just can't. I lived it for 15 years, not only in the house, but when I got into this job.
It's funny to hear you reference it as a job. You know, because
it's straight up a job, man. For me, it was a job. It wasn't, and it still isn't, anything to be glorified. Because, I mean, as I sit here, I have two horizontal tears in my ankles, no PCL in my right knee. I've done my MCL 4 times. I've had an ACL reconstructive surgery. I have arthritis in both knees. I've had a left arthroscopic hip surgery. I've had my abdomen stapled back to my pelvis. I have arthritis in both of my hips. I have no left labrum in my shoulder. I have three inches of arthritis in 3 of my discs in my neck. Numerous neck tears.
How
from
are you
the
walking?
Fights.
And you're walking pretty normal, might I say.
Yeah. I mean, my wife wouldn't say that, but I try to keep moving, you know, but, and then there's 7 diagnosed concussions, you know, so there's a lot, like, and this isn't to deter anybody from being a professional athlete, man. Do your thing. Right.
But did you know that this is like, hey, I'm going to do this, you know, because I still want to get to a couple points as you're growing up into the sport. But you had to think on some level getting into this, you know, it's like, you know, a high risk
100%.
Sport. It's not like you're playing golf.
No, nope.
You know, you're
100%. You're going to be bruised up.
Exactly.
You know,
like, and you got to, and I'm sure younger, you're like, I'm Superman. I'm not going to get, you know, I'm going to knock this guy out. I'm going to check him into the boards and nothing's going to happen to me.
Watch my fights from 18 to 24 before I should put a compilation together before
you
before I was introduced to spirituality. Spirituality
Changed everything.
Changed me big time. Changed the way I played the game. Even how I reacted on the ice. Because now all of a sudden, I'm not just reacting. I'm thinking. That's not good for a hockey player.
Were you thinking about fighting? Like, were you like...
Absolutely not. Like, not early on, no.
Not early, okay.
No, you play, and again, it's within the subset of a game, and you've been in those situations thousands of times as a kid, like on the boards, getting hit. Yeah. Someone gets hit, what do? You stick up for them.
Yeah.
You know, you get hit, what do? You stick up for yourself, or even else they'll keep doing it, right? It's, I mean, man, hockey transfers to real life really, really well.
And I want to hear those parallels because I'm sure there's a lot of ego involved. Violence is obvious in this. Mm-hmm. But as you graduated from, the earlier stages in your hockey career, getting into the semi-pro leagues, you and I had some conversations. And ironically, Danny and I met not in Chicago because Danny is a former two-time Stanley Cup Chicago Blackhawks champ. But we met in Orlando at an event, and I really... when you're out of your element, you don't think of like, oh, that's Danny. Like, and it's so funny because I went up to him and I asked him a question about like hanging a poster somewhere that had nothing to do with him. And somebody pointed in his direction and said, hey, ask that guy over there to find out where we're going to hang this poster. So I go over there and there's Danny. And I'm like, hey, buddy, they told me to ask you whatever. He's like, who? What? But if, ironically, it was fate because Danny and I had a fantastic conversation, spoke, for most of the evening that night. Really hit it off, and which led to this interview today. And in that conversation, Danny, you and I had outside of that restaurant, you told me some stuff that you said you'd be willing to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I never forgot it.
Mm-hmm.
And one was during your climb into becoming a professional hockey player, you mentioned that the dark side of hockey, growing up with teammates and the kind of, frat-like activities that happen behind the scenes. You were victim to some of that as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I was a victim of child abuse. When I moved away at 16 from King City to Sarnia, Ontario, to play for the Sarnia Sting, there was a coach who's still coaching kids to this day, Jeff Perry, who harbored a culture of just nastiness, broke a bunch of young men is what I've realized now in speaking to the veterans and going back and talking to all the guys, like trying to figure out and why this was so bad, because our experience was really bad, like probably one of the most extreme. Yeah. And I always say that because it's not always like that, right? And but it's still my experience, and so I have to talk about it so that hopefully, like other parents can recognize these, signs and symptoms in their kids.
Absolutely.
And, I don't think sports should be linked to hazing. I think hazing's abuse. I don't think that, making a guy, a 16-year-old kid who's moved away from home, his friends, his family, his high school, just trying to make the NHL, and then every day I have to walk into the room and, these guys are sawing off paddles and making us bend over in front of everybody, going from stall to stall, 12 guys. You got to pull your pants down, bend over, take a lick from every single one. And if you flinch, you got it harder.
Ugh.
That was every day.
And every
it never,
day?
Yeah, and it never stopped. And nobody said anything until Kenny, our trainer, saw all the welts on our ass. Some guys were having trouble sitting down in school. And
Coach knew about this?
Coach knew, yeah. He walked in one day. Yeah.
Wow.
Stuff in the shower. There's a lot. There's verbal, sexual, and physical abuse of minors. And Jeff Perry, again, is still coaching Junior C. And I actually just had a text conversation with somebody in Sarnia who's been instrumental in helping me recover and helping the community recover. Because I went back there after I announced, what had happened to me on Bullying Awareness Week on Twitter. And everybody was wondering why I did it. I did it because I was triggered by the story in St. Mike's, Toronto, a private school. This one kid got held down and had a broomstick shoved up his behind.
Wow.
And so if that stuff is still happening now, and then I didn't think about it for 14 years, I put it in a box. Emotional trauma is a
it happens.
Yeah. And, but this is, so then that comes out of Pandora's box, right? And people are always asking me, oh, you're so nice off the ice. Like, why were you like that? Why were you like that? Why were you like that? Growing up, you're getting, you know, physically, you know, abused just because that's the Italian way. You get hit with paddles and, you know, if you don't listen, three boys.
And you're faced to deal with it and not cry. Don't cry.
Yeah,
Take this punishment. Don't cry because I'll hit you again.
And it's also like, well, and then when the days are you don't want to talk or something's wrong, well, talk to me, right? Well, how do you talk to, even though it's your parent, how do you see them as an abuser when you're young, right? So, It's a fine line, and
do you think that fueled your anger on the ice? Like everything that happened to you, did you bottle that and say, "Man, I was fucked with so much growing up into this sport that fuck you, I'm going to take this now back out on everyone else."
Again, so emotional release, right?
Yeah,
and it wasn't about it wasn't about hurting people. Like that thought never comes in your mind. You don't put on your skates thinking I'm gonna go hurt people.
It does seem that way,
but this is the way the game was made.
Yeah,
there's rules and I followed them and I did them to the best of my ability. And
did they literally tell you, did your coach tell you, like, get out there and take that guy's head off?
Yeah, of course.
Really?
At every level, even in the NHL,
from the ownership on down,
by one of the greatest ever, the greatest to play the game.
Craziness, man. So, as you built this rep, you know, in the NHL of being the, you know, they gave you the nickname the car bomb. You know, why? Because you'd go out there and blow stuff up, you know, and you'd take care of business when you needed to. Did it mess with your head, like, from a player standpoint of being just a good hockey player? Did you feel pigeonholed to not be able to be a Mario Lemieux or Gretzky or you know, show a skill in a different level where now you basically were sent on the ice to just take care of business?
No, I never saw it like that. And I kind of always resented that I was an enforcer. I'm not a heavyweight. I was a light heavyweight and I was a 30-goal scorer every year. I was drafted 73rd overall. Right. It was not because of my fighting. I fought 4 times in 3 years in the OHL.
Yeah.
So I knew who I was. What happens when you get to the AHL is that you're playing against men immediately. And if anybody's seen me play when I was 16, 17, I had a lot of energy and I would put my shoulder right through your chest if you have a little black puck around you.
Yeah. What age did you get into the pros?
18, I was drafted. My first year pro was 19.
And the
19
average,
turning 20.
Was that young for that time?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first year you could turn pro. That's the early. Well, unless you're in the NHL, you have to be 20 in the AHL to turn pro. I don't know if that rule's changed, but that's how it was back then. So as soon as, you know, I was drafted in the NHL, grade 11.
And then he put you right on the ice, basically?
Yeah. I mean, you know,
because that's a massive amount of pressure, Danny. I mean, you're going to the big leagues, like, instantly.
It is, but for me, the way I thought about it was, number one, I got to put some weight on because I was 165 pounds, I think 170 pounds. Blowing kids up because it's 15-year-old to 21-year-olds. But now you're playing against men with 3 kids and they're bringing their kids in the room and you're like, what? And I'm a kid from King City, 7,000 people.
They got that old man strength.
No doubt they do. But then you also have to be like, you got to be respectful and you're not, I mean, as soon as you get to the AHL, you're a pro.
Yeah.
I was like, I had a big learning curve, man. It took me 3-4 years. Like, I did a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah, and pro meaning the etiquette
like
of being a professional.
Yes.
Being a professional.
Acting like a professional.
Right.
Because now you're signed to a contract, and anything you do is inherently attached to that team.
Right.
It's a hard concept for a kid to learn when all he's doing is playing a fucking game, man. Yeah, like, literally, it's just a puck. There's no out of bounds. You pass, you shoot, you hit. The way I was taught is you take your opponent's will to play away. So over 60 minutes, it starts in warm-up. You make eye contact. You jaw. You know, sometimes you're face-to-face. Sometimes you're shooting pucks. Sometimes you slash guys.
Yeah.
Let them know that they're in for a battle. And then in the 58th minute, when it's a tie game and someone hesitates because they're so beat up, that's when you win. As soon as somebody hesitates, it's the little, little details, just like in life, that you enjoy in hockey. It's these little details. It's a board battle that was lost that keeps the puck and that ends up in the back of your net.
Yeah.
It's always that little stuff, you know? So you got to, Which you try to pay attention to it. And what I did, like to your question before, like I literally looked at fighting and I saw a role, the enforcer role that was in the NHL. And I said, well, okay, I could skate, I could hit, I could shoot. Maybe if I add sticking up for my teammates with my fists, it'll get me in the NHL quicker. I said, it's like another highlight on your resume.
Sure, of course.
And it's a hockey resume. Like, that's what you have. You have your off-ice stuff, and you have your on-ice, you know? And again, early in my career, I wasn't so great off the ice because I wasn't ready to be a professional, you know? And teams hear that, and they're hesitant. But it only took me a year and a half to break in, and because of my on-ice play and how passionate I was. And again, you add that element. I had to put on 20 pounds, you know, that summer because I was scared.
Did you take fight training too?
No.
No, no boxing, nothing?
No.
Really?
Hockey's not technical, man. You grab a jersey and you
Well, first
punch.
Of all, you're on skates. So, I mean, to fight on skates to me is I always used to be fascinated how you guys stood up and swung like that. And didn't bust your ass and fall. I mean, it had happened, but you had some pretty good stability, man. I've seen your fights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I didn't lose many either.
No.
You know? But that goes to being, early on in my career, reckless. You know, just sticking my head in there. But I have a reach. I know my reach. I know where his jaw is. I always like to come in and spray the face or come in with an actual punch instead of just grabbing his jersey because then all of a sudden he's off balance.
Stunned.
And I have him, yeah.
Yeah, so you had a method to your madness.
Yeah, like a push-pulley system.
A push-pulley system.
Yeah. So you
really haven't thought out, Danny.
As he's punching, you're pushing.
Yeah.
So when he's coming forward, you're pushing his shoulder back and he's off balance now. And then as he's off balance, then you're pulling.
Yeah.
And you're coming in with a punch.
So all this experience and your climb into the NHL brought you to two Stanley Cup championship rings, 2013-2015 Chicago Blackhawks. That must have been a pretty epic moment for you, right? Despite all of the challenges, you've reached what every professional athlete winning the cup in their chosen field. How did that feel for you?
2013, I was kind of pissed off, to be honest with you.
Really?
I only played four games, but tried to be the best
for injury
teammate
reasons
guy.
Why, or
no, just
didn't I mean, they just didn't put you on
teams,
the ice,
man. Yeah. Yeah, but as an athlete, if you're not upset about not playing, you're not going to be an athlete for very long.
True,
you know. And but I was fortunate, man. Nobody really knows this, but in 2013, during the lockout, I went to seek out treatment from the help of and persistence, literally months. From Steve Monitor telling me to go to the Carrick Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. And I don't think I would be here because I've had two concussions since 2013 in the NHL. And it helped extend my career for 3 years, you know. And yeah, I do have two cups. And usually the only time I bring them up or bring that up is, you know, to get people to listen to me. You go, oh, wow, two cups.
Makes you a little resentful, doesn't it?
To think the cups?
Well, just to think that that's why people would talk about
it. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind it. It's a thing. It's something that I did, and people, I get it. You
Can
know
be
what
honest
I mean?
With you? I'm going to tell you something really honest here. When I met you in Orlando, I didn't know who you were.
Perfect. I love that, man.
Right? And we had a real conversation, and I couldn't give a fuck who you were at that moment.
Good.
What you did. And
good.
Stanley, like nothing. I really, honestly,
I want
God's
that,
honest
man.
Truth.
I want that. Like, that's why I've systematically cut ties with hockey.
Yeah.
I don't want to be known, and I just want to bust out of that bubble, man. It's such a bubble. And
well, then to say that from a guy who's won two Stanley Cups, which again is the dream of every athlete in professional sports to win their cup, their trophy, their medal, but you have zero attachment to it.
None.
You have anger towards it. Let's talk about Let's talk
there's
about that.
I would say, I mean, if I'm not angry some days, then there's a problem, you know, frustration, a lot of frustration. But the more that you learn, the more frustrated and angry you get, you know, because I don't like being lied to, man.
Yeah.
You know, like if I'm doing a bad job, I really responded to coaches saying, hey, you're fucking up. Do better instead of just tiptoe around the issue and beat around the bush. No, man, tell me.
Sugarcoat it.
Yeah, just tell me. I'm not, my feelings aren't going to be hurt. How I respond, you know.
And you have a damn good reason to be upset, because through your career, being the enforcer, taking the hits, giving the hits, you've had some pretty traumatic stuff happen to you. Let's give some credit to the anger. Give me the reason why you're so upset with the NHL and the entire, you know, industry of pro hockey.
Not only because of the situation I'm in, but the situation that hundreds of guys are in, and for the guys that can't talk anymore, that are dead.
You've had some friends that have passed,
mm-hmm.
and it's been publicly, you know, stated, and you have mm-hmm. some pretty bold comments out there about mm-hmm. all this, and I'd love for you to share some of your opinions on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the NHL withholding the information that we truly deserved about the proper understanding of traumatic brain injuries, and then take it a step further, actually diagnosing and caring for these brain injuries. The fact that they didn't do that for Bob Probert and Steve Monitor and Wade Bielak and Aaron Bugard and Rick Rippon. The fact that there's all of these accidental overdoses, and the fact that you leave a hockey game, you leave a job without the proper understanding of why you're having these mental health complications now that you were never predisposed to. I was never born with depression and anxiety. What I have is a chemical imbalance that brings on those mental health issues and complications, like those two symptoms and like suicidal ideation, which ultimately pushes you into changing your life. No.
You weren't born feeling depressed, anxiety.
I wasn't born with a neurological imbalance. Okay. That's what a mental illness is.
Yeah.
I developed cognitive dysfunction and my mental health complications because of the years of repetitive head trauma and the chemical changes. Every single time you get hit, whether it's accidental or not, your brain chemistry changes.
Hmm.
We know this.
So, like, you know, I take devil's advocate. I'm the president of the NHL. Hey, Danny, you signed up for this, buddy. You knew what you're getting into. You started those fights. You branded yourself as an enforcer. You can't come crying back to me and tell me that, you know, you want money from us. You want, you know, reconciliation for a job you chose. Is that the attitude that they're taking?
Well, the NHL specifically is the last sports league out of anybody to admit a direct link between repetitive head trauma and CTE amongst, you know, former athletes and veterans. My position is that I know that you withheld information. The NHL and the NFL work together on symposiums. I know about the 28 out of the 40 doctors who have strong relationships to collision sports. I know that they went outside of North America to have somebody head up their international consensus group for concussions. The more you learn, the more you realize that you were put into an environment that was dangerous, and they knew it, and you didn't.
And you don't feel like at all they can say, yes, but you played hockey your whole life and you signed up for this.
No, because when I sign a contract and I can't go to another doctor because I'm living in the United States and I don't have health care, I go to a doctor, like a team
doctor.
You're
telling me the NHL doesn't have an ongoing insurance program?
Well, now I do because I pay for it. But in the NHL, when you're in your career, you get treated by the team doctor. Flu shots, guess what? The whole family walks down to the room and gets their flu shots from the team doctor.
So is it kind of like a Is it like the firm?
It is. It's crazy, man.
The control?
So, yes, it's all control. Narrative, media. Like, when do you ever see personality? Give me a break. Sure. It's all rehearsed. It's all driven into you, because if you show your personality as a hockey player, you're a pariah. Yeah. You're outside of the box. You got to be a good little soldier with hockey, man. It's a little bit different than the NBA.
Even in today's world of social media and authenticity and originality that everybody talks about.
Who do you see out there doing it? Other than PK Subban and...
Well, Kane he was a little outspoken and then got himself in a little situation with, like, drinking and being out and that stuff.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, that was years and years ago, and he's since changed and he's living a sober life and he's fucking killing it.
Yeah.
You know? So things happen where people change, but... No, you don't see... Why don't guys have suit deals?
So you're not allowed to get endorsement deals outside?
No, you got
to
go through the NHLPA. They own your rights.
Wow.
Again, it goes back to the doctors. You sign a contract. I'm under the care of their medical professionals. You cannot just leave, because you know what happens? Steve Monitor. Steve Monitor's situation, the Blackhawks couldn't clear him for the fourth concussion in less than fucking 12 weeks, okay? Me and him going to dinners, like just talking it out. What do you want to do? And then eventually it got to a point where nothing was changing. He was going through the same test, the GGT test, which is an exertion test that you have to pass to be able to play for the Blackhawks. That's not NHL mandated. That was created by Paul Goodman and Mike Gapsky without the help of a neurologist. So an athletic trainer and a strength and conditioning coach. Wow. Try to get that through your head. They couldn't get him through that test for the fourth time in 12 weeks to clear him, fit to play. Me and him were going home. He was in rough shape, man, really rough shape. And one night we were just talking, crying, and he just left. He left for the Carrick Institute. We knew it was there because he'd gone prior, right, during the lockout. This is the lockout year. And then I'd gone. So I'm like, go, man, go. This is your life. Fuck them.
Yeah.
You know? Like, just go. And this is when you have to understand, we have no understanding of what a concussion is or a brain injury. These terms are not used.
And okay, purposely, they keep you away from this information.
Yes, so that they suppress it. Wow. They suppressed it from 1989 to 2003. You can go back and look.
That's insane.
You know, so anyway, Steve leaves. He goes to find proper treatment without the consent of the NHL or NHLPA. He comes back better. Passes the GGT test because they sent him to a functional neurologist, Dr. Ted Carrick. Save Crosby, Peyton Manning, myself, Claude Giroux. Hundreds and hundreds of professional athletes, all right? Comes back. They clear him to play. What happens? Send him down.
Really?
Oh, yeah. A couple hours later, I think it was.
Punishment.
Yep. You don't toe the company line? Fuck you.
Wow, it sounds like
sent him down. Okay,
like he's with the mafia. I mean,
it is. He's with the team the whole year, the year prior. Everybody fucking loves Monty, right?
Yeah.
Usually, when you go on a playoff run, the best players from the AHL team are a black ace.
Yep.
Nope. Monty's not allowed around the rink.
Wow.
So you have to understand that. If you don't do exactly what they say, and like try to think about this, Steve's just trying to get better so he can play and do his fucking job,
right? And probably paid for it himself, right?
100%. You know, he's still going to get paid either way. Like, why don't teams want to provide this care for their players? Save them money.
You're basically a modern-day David taking on the Goliath of the NHL.
I'm not even taking them on. Like, there's no real end game for me. Ultimately, Frank, what I'm trying to do is use the NHL and their platform and their absolute disregard for treating traumatic brain injuries and get this information to the veteran community, link up with NFL players. I talk a lot about the NFL settlement and the NHL settlement because... Now the NFL
was nominal, right? Like,
the NHL is a joke, but the NFL specifically, the judges actually changed terms of their settlement, right? You just have to understand like what you're getting into and what you're signing up for, and
right.
That's why I talk like really honestly about it. You know?
If your platform could really become the pre-test or the pre-pro. Filter before you get into there just to understand what you're really signing up for.
And parents too, right? Like, so yeah. Parents, police officers, firefighters, veterans, women of domestic violence, child abuse victims, divers, PBR, like bull riders. There's so many Monster Jam, what's there? So there's all these communities, right? And what my ultimate goal is to connect everybody because concussions and the symptoms are a human issue. We can't even agree, like medical professionals can't even agree on, you know, some people are still grading concussions, some are grading traumatic brain injuries. Do you know the difference between a concussion and a traumatic brain injury and CTE?
Yeah, I don't. I mean.
Right. I mean, like, why not?
Layperson will not know
this. So if you get into a car accident, if you leave here, like knock on wood, and, you know, where do you go? Do you know?
No, I mean, you get shuffled into an ambulance and you go to the nearest hospital.
And you go outside, but do you know your rights? Like, you go outside in that car accident, instead of bumping your head, say, for example, you break your leg, you know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
Right? we need to know, you know, there needs to be more research. There needs to be more female brains studied, right? Yeah. There aren't. Why is that? There's no female NFL. Yeah.
I mean, so your advocacy isn't just limited to
absolutely pro not. Athletes. Absolutely not. I don't. Again, it goes back to, you know, not to be rude or anything, but I don't really care about pro athletes. How many pro athletes are there in the world?
Right.
How many millions of people go to an emergency room?
Yeah.
You know, I want to know like where you will go. If you get into a car accident, I want to know where those people go. I want to know the type of treatment they get. MRIs and CT scans are okay to look at brain lesions, but they don't tell you anything about a concussion.
Yeah. Do you feel like this all happened to you for this very reason, for you to become the voice, the fighter you were on the ice? Now you are the fighter for the innocent off the ice in a massive battle.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. Again, it's just learning, you know, like if you read and you learn and then there's injustice and there's people lying, there's ways to exploit them, like not exploit them, but to tell the truth.
But I imagine you probably got shut down because of how powerful and large and financially, you know, wealthy the NHL is. You know, they probably, and maybe I'm wrong, but tried to cover your mouth with tape a bunch of times.
Yeah, I did a sort of 670 interview, and I said that the NHL is killing human beings because I believe that.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's
quote.
How serious brain injuries are, though. You know, if your autonomic system is off, then you can get into a situation like Bob Probert, where he has a heart attack on a hot, humid day on a boat in front of his kids.
That's terrible. That's related to brain trauma?
Yeah, your autonomic system.
Wow.
It actually regulates your blood vessel diameter.
Crazy
heart now, rate, you know, you just your brain regulates everything, your pituitary gland, your hormones,
yeah,
your brain stem.
Yep. Now, did they come after you at all? I mean, except do you still have an ongoing lawsuit against the NHL?
So the NHL concussion settlement was recently settled on. I did not opt in,
but did you ignite that whole movement?
No, it started when I was still playing. I couldn't sign up until I was done playing.
Okay.
You know, and then I didn't sign up for 2 years in retirement. Again, reading, learning. I don't talk about stuff until I understand it. You know, it's not like I read one email of the 297. I read every fucking email, every word.
Yeah. And I mean, while you were suffering from your own traumatic,
anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, not being able to go outside, play with my son because I couldn't find my glasses, migraines, head pressure, insomnia, oversleeping, I mean, impulse control.
And you have 3 kids, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How has this impacted your family life at home?
It's tough. It's a roller coaster, but I try my best, you know, to, when I have those bad days, to kind of just be patient, you know, and practice that. But that's what's frustrating too, you know, it's, you do something for so long, and ultimately you want to do it to have a family, and then you know, you don't know if you're gonna, how long, you know, you're gonna be able to remember that.
Yeah, that's a powerful,
scary.
You have a lot of great quotes that I've been researching and talking about. One of them was exactly about that. Is like, you know,
scary,
sports is all about creating memories, and it kind of sucks that I maybe not be able to remember any of them.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, then. Shit, there's a lot of memories that I don't want to remember, but there's, you know, because of hockey, everyone thinks I hate it, because of hockey and because of the work that I put in, me, I have everything in my life now, you know, my wife, my kids, my friends.
Yeah.
But that all comes down to Daniel, you know. If Daniel kept, you know, drinking and smoking and fucking off with his life at 25, I wouldn't have 2 Stanley Cups. I wouldn't be here in this city talking to you. And I believe everything happens for a reason. I know it's a really generic quote, but...
No, it's true, man.
It is, it's man. True. People are put in your life and for a reason. And like, if things don't work out, it's for a reason.
Of course it is.
ACL blowout. I was playing with Kane and Hossa, man upstairs, whoever it is. No, knock you down a few pegs or two. That's not who you are.
Now, let's talk about this. You mentioned spirituality earlier, and... you know, this show is all about transformation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've heard what's happened to you in your life and all the trauma. Let's talk about coming out of it. Let's talk about what you did. What tools did you apply to renovate your life to become a better person today with all these challenges you still have on your shoulders?
Yeah, so at 21, nobody knows this about me, but I got a DUI in Arizona. Right after I signed, it was 3 days before training camp. I moved both my brothers down to Arizona, and I just signed the biggest contract to date, 2-year deal, and not a good situation, right? And I had to do, so I ended up playing that season. They postponed my jail time to the end of the year. I did 30 days in jail, and that felony, because it's a felony, if you get a felony, you're ultimately forced into the substance abuse and behavioral program. Mm-hmm. So that's when I was introduced to, you know, Andrew Galloway, Dr. Shaw, Dr. Lewis, who works for the league, Dan Cronin. And
this was after you signed a pro contract.
Yeah, this is, I'm in the NHL about to start my first full year.
And you get a DIY and you end up in jail.
Yeah.
The league didn't instantly go, fuck you, buddy, you're out.
Nobody knew. So Wayne Gretzky was our head coach, and we had a really good security guy who was an ex-sheriff, and he just had his buddies kept shuffling the paperwork underneath, so it never got out.
This is real world, though, folks. Like what Danny's saying is exactly what happens on a day-to-day basis every day, a la the, you know, big scandal with these, you know, USC and, you know, all these celebrities getting nailed for shuffling papers behind the scenes. It happens in every single facet of the world.
No doubt. And they were just trying to protect me, keep my name out of the media, you know, and I appreciate that because when you're that age, like it's embarrassing, you know, and you're still trying to process it. And they tried to convince me I was an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I don't have a phenomenon of craving with alcohol.
Yeah.
And so I fought them. And up until, man, I fought them for like a good 4 or 5 years. I had to piss test pretty much once a week. But I was in that program for my whole career. And then fast forward, after 2010, I had 2 surgeries in 14 days. My left labrum surgery, and then I had my abdomen stapled back to my pelvis. I think it was 10 days later, and then I got my first script of
painkillers,
opiates, and I was overprescribed and undereducated. And for somebody like me who likes to do things to kind of numb certain things out, it was perfect. And I got into trouble with it. And luckily, again, this is full circle. You talk about reflection. Yeah. 21, DUI, worst, you know, event of my life, ended up saving my life. Because then I turned back to Dan Cronin. I said, I need help, man. You know, and then I ended up blowing my ACL out. And I went to treatment. I went to a rehab place in Malibu. And I still go back every year just to kind of check it out. And it's since one of the main houses burnt down since that
big fire.
And
is there where you found spirituality?
Yeah, that's where I found spirituality, meditation, actually like processing my emotions, talk to my family. We had a family weekend. Wow. It was fucking awesome, man. Transformational, no doubt.
As a good Italian boy, are you a Catholic or are you?
I mean, I grew up an altar boy, like extreme type of stuff. And I believe in a higher power. I don't believe in
a particular religion.
No. You know, you put people from different religions in this room and don't give them water.
Yeah.
We're all going to die.
Right. Exactly.
There's nobody coming to
and
save
I, and
us.
I believe, you know, it's all the same entity in a way that we all either pray to. And I'm with you. I'm spiritual, not necessarily religious, but grew up Catholic. And found my own way, you know, and I do the same, meditate, I breathe, I'm compassionate and empathetic. And I think those are the things that matter more than believing in a particular type of God.
Yeah. It's tough for me to really reconcile with like an entity that's worth $30 billion off of faith, you know, and what I've seen it, man, it's all about giving money.
Yeah.
What do you get in return? Well, you get faith.
Right. And you also get complexes because did you sin? Are you on the good side or the bad side?
Well, it's a funny thing, you know, like I see it in my father-in-law, you know, he's a businessman from Poland and he's like, you know, John Paul III, right?
Yeah.
Like big time Roman Catholic. And I think, like, I honestly think if he doesn't keep donating and stuff, he's going to, like, be poor, or he's not going to get business, or, you know, like, it's so inherently, entrenched, you know? And for me, I just believe in, I'm going to treat you like a, like I want to be treated. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to give you the time of day.
Yeah.
Just because I push the fucking puck around. You think I'm going to be rude to you?
Yeah.
That shit doesn't mean anything to me. Like, I try not to have any ego and move forward. And I believe as I move forward, I'm going to meet people and people are going to be put in my life and then things are going to start happening. You know,
that's it, man, you can't resist the flow of life.
You know? No. And you know, I just went through like good, like 2 weeks. 2 weeks of depression. I looked at my phone today. I'm like, holy shit, the date's the 23rd.
Really?
Yeah.
So leading up to this interview, you've been in a bout of depression.
Yeah, I've been in I've been a lot of anxiety, depression. It's ever since being back here from Florida, it's been.
Yeah.
It hasn't been the easiest transition. And I don't know if that's the weather or if that's.
The weather does suck in Chicago sometimes, yeah, especially this time of year. But I understand what you're saying. And there was a recent study that said, you know, environment is maybe, I think it was like 40% of a person's well-being.
I felt unbelievable in Florida.
Oh, it's like great,
the best,
wasn't it?
The best I've ever felt.
There Vitamin D, man.
Yeah. There weren't that many bad days, man.
That's you good. Know?
And we have 3 kids under the age of 4. Like, it's nice to be able to just open your door and go to a park. And
I know. Wife and I debate that all the time. It's like, should we stay here? Should we go? You know, on your journey back and in your human renovation, do you feel you've reached a good place today? Do you feel like you've done the work? And is there any tools that you would say you've been in your arsenal to really help you, you know, when you pull yourself out of that depression? Like, what tools do you use?
Reaching out, you know, texting, talking. Whenever I get into those situations, I kind of tend to isolate.
Yeah, like most people do. Right?
Yeah, it's pretty common. But like, it's a problem for me because I fucking love my alone time, you know. And
it's tough with 3 kids and a wife, right?
There's no alone time, you know. Yeah. And so, for example, this past weekend, me and my dad, when he came down, we drywalled like the whole basement and stuff. And
yeah,
I try to stay busy, you know, and stay positive, and some days easier than others, but knowing that it'll subside and it'll end is important.
Yeah.
And I don't like using medication because of my opiate dependency.
Say, like CBDs and things like that.
Well, CBD is fine with me.
Cannabis, medical cannabis.
Yeah. There's a reason the U.S. government has 2 patents out on cannabinoids.
Yeah.
One is a neuroprotectant.
Yeah.
And one is as an anti-inflammatory. And from what I know about brain injuries is, and any injury really, is pain and suffering is caused by inflammation.
You know?
And so you got to watch your diet and you got to try to keep your inflammation down. And it's the same for our heads. You know, there's inflammation in our heads. So,
Do you feel like you're in a good place today? Like in a big picture, not from the micro of the depressions here and there, but
What I'm looking for now is like, are some signs as far as what I'm going to do moving forward to put food on my family's table, you know?
Yeah.
501c3 doesn't do that.
You do have a nonprofit and a charity. What is the name of it again?
Chapter 5 Foundation. Yeah, it's a transition program in its essence. And over the years, I think, like, we're getting to a point now where with the foundation and with everybody that we've helped, we're kind of like, it's pushing us into a sort of a different direction than transition. And it's always coming back to brain health, you know, like,
yeah,
I have anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation. I can't sleep. Oh, let's get you a job. That'll fucking work. You know, like, it's a lot of self-discovery with athletes because their ego is so intrinsically just tied to people screaming, 21,000 people, you know. Well, you wake up.
And do you believe ego is the devil for you? Like, do you think?
No, I never tapped into that. Not me. Most people, I think, you know.
So your ego never lived for you. You never drove you. Because I would imagine a sport like hockey, on a professional level, there is ego involved and, you know, on some level. And
I mean, I wasn't the best person from 19 to 25.
Yeah.
You know? I wasn't
full yourself and
I wouldn't say, I mean, I think I lost my way a little bit.
Yeah.
And that happens. You know, you have to, I strayed and then you come back to it.
Yeah.
You know, you come back to who you are, like your learned behavior and what your parents raised you on.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I always kind of come back to. And that's morals. And when you're talking to someone, look them in the eye and you shake their hand and you say, please, you say, thank you. You open a door, you fucking shut it.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily, I wouldn't say complain or bitch, but you try to speak honestly about, you know, how you're feeling, you know, yeah, because that helps me. Well, helps me, man. Like, even when I'm having a bad day, it's like, well, shit, I just had a rough, like, 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to say that in there. Because fuck, man, you look on Instagram and Twitter and all these spiritual gurus and every fuck out. Oh, it's fucking awesome. Life's great. Fuck.
Every quote. Every
oh, really?
Other day.
Is it fucking great? Like, man, give me a fucking bad day, please. Yeah. Like, show me a bad day.
Oh, I mean, that's a whole other topic of social media and the falsehood that it promotes and these moments in people's lives that are all staged and produced and, you know, to elicit the idea that their life is fantastic when reality, it sucks, you know, and I, you know, that's the good and bad about social media. I do honor it. I do think it has its place. But
for
I do
sure,
think
man.
The world of influencers has become run rampant and become so oversaturated with falsehood that you really have to be careful who you follow, what information you get to. But for you, you know, if I was to ask you, man, if the Danny today can talk to the Danny at 19 – what would the Danny of today tell that younger Danny? What one piece of advice would you say would change the trajectory of where you would have been today?
Just learning more about brain injuries, you know, but that's why I believe Steve Monroe was put in my life. And
so you'd still do hockey. You'd still do the same path. You'd still do everything you did.
Yeah, man, I get this question a lot, and I don't want to fucking change anything.
just more education on what could have happened to you.
Yeah, maybe.
What did happen to you.
Yeah, just provide me with that. Yeah. Like, literally, let me make my own decision. When you withhold that, you rob that from me.
Yeah.
That's my problem.
Yeah.
And then you actually learn about how devastating each hit, each subconcussive hit is. And then you get fucking angry, man.
Yeah.
You know, especially like with the cognitive dysfunction that I deal with on a day-to-day basis. I'm still somewhat sharp, thank God, but, you know, I shouldn't fucking feel like this at 34, man. You know?
I mean, the one thing, you know, though, that I notice and that people notice about you who follow you and appreciate your work is you're resilient. Motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You are a fighter in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you've been on the ice and you are off the ice. And as long as you stay steadfast with a positive mission, my friend, I believe in you that you will achieve that level of greatness that you're looking for off the ice.
Well, there's the balance too, right?
Yeah.
It's positive. Like, how do you keep something that's so real and so uncomfortable for people to even read? How do you get that message across?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's like... That's the gravy, or that's like the special sauce of like where you need to stay. And so what do? Who do people look at? Fucking athletes. Why? Because they think they just, you know, didn't put any work in and the team gave them everything. The NHL gave me everything.
Nah, man.
Absolutely fucking not, man.
Yeah.
I did.
That's right.
I was in the gym for 3 hours a fucking day.
Yeah.
I didn't go golf because I had to go home and get 3 bags of ice and sit in my cold tub, in a bathtub. Like, those are the things that I was doing at 18, 19. What are you doing at 18 or 19? You're not doing that.
So no, you're taking selfies on your Instagram, right?
You go to the Bears game. Oh, yeah. It's just different. You apply yourself a lot younger. In doing that, you miss a lot of your self-discovery phase of who you truly are because it's dedicated to one thing.
Right.
Hockey.
But you're so young enough now in the next 30 years of your life.
You can reinvent yourself. That's
you totally can.
For sure. And it's exciting, but it's fucking so hard.
It is.
It's so hard because...
One day at a time, brother. One
no
day
doubt,
time.
Yeah. Because there's days I wake up, I'm like, fuck, man, I need a job.
Yeah.
I got to go start, you know, plowing snow. You get a snow plow. You know, you buy a truck. You know, you think about just getting like a regular 9-to-5 job, you know, but then is that going to fulfill you?
No.
You know,
it's going to pay your bills, but it's not going to fulfill you mentally. But you know, just like me, I come from a career where it's cyclical. You know, one year I have a television show and I'm on a national platform. The next year I'm like scrambling for the next gig.
Right.
You know, and I'm feeling those same things you are.
Like, 1099.
1099 in it, man. And it's like, are you going to, you know, so I started a business on the side. It's doing well. And, you know, but the flip side, there's been a years where I'm like getting down to the pennies in my bank account going, shit, I better figure this out. You know, and that's so challenging. And I went through my own bout of depression and anxiety and digging myself out of these situations. Thus, this podcast is born because I honor it. I live it.
Right.
And I appreciate guys like you coming on the show, being completely authentic, raw and real, and sharing your story with people on a different level that can help the young Dannys of the world who can listen to this and go, shit, I could do this. And now I have the knowledge that Danny never had.
You know, what I want to do is talk to people and just try to humanize this thing. But ultimately, like when I look at myself at 60, and I introduce myself as Daniel Carcillo. Like, they know me as Daniel Carcillo. They're not like, oh, you're that fucking hockey player, right?
The car bomb.
Yeah, no.
Are you sick of hearing car bomb?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. So, ultimately, you want to, at 60, you want the respect outside of the ice, outside of your career, to be a humanitarian in a way. You want to be able to change people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be fucking successful away from hockey, man.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
End of story. You know, and I want to help people, and it's not like, that's it, you know, and so it's a struggle, man, for me, because it's like everything I am is inherently tied to like this fucking job I did. But what people I think what they're missing is the reason I was successful at that, and the reason I'll be successful after that fucking career is because of who I am as a person,
the grit that you apply to your
morals,
task.
Parents, what they instilled in me, and then my learned behavior, you know, like what you read, who your friends are, what you learn in school, what you gravitate to.
Yep.
And those, like, I have a really good grasp on who I am and who I will talk to and who I won't fucking talk to.
The beauty of age comes wisdom, my friend.
No doubt. No doubt.
Well, Danny, thank you so much, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Real.
Appreciate it.